Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The thirst for young adult literature appeared to start with Harry Potter, gained speed with the Twilight series, and now has reached a fevered pitch with the Hunger Games trilogy. And it is reflected in the longevity of beloved comic strip Funky Winkerbean by Tom Baddock, one of the featured authors at this year's Ohioana Book Festival, and one of three authors with us today to talk about the trend of young adult literature. Joining us is Tom Baddock, the author of The Complete Funky Winkerbean. It's a new compilation of the first couple years of the strip. He's a native of Akron, Ohio. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Also joining us in the studio is Casey Daniels. She's a Cleveland native, and she still lives in Northeast Ohio. She is the author of the Pepper Martin mystery series, including Dawn of the Dead, The Chick and the Dead, and the most recent title, A Hard Day's Fright. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone from Kent State University, where she is teaching a class today, is Cinda Williams-Kima. Cinda is a New York Times bestselling author of the young adult fantasy series, The Air Chronicles, and also the Seven Realms series, including The Grey Wolf Throne. Welcome to the show, Cinda.
Glad to be here.
All three will be appearing this Saturday at the 6th Annual Ohioana Book Festival held at Fort Hays Metropolitan Education Center. For more information about this free event, which is open to the public, you can go to ohioanabookfestival.org. We'll also post that website, a link to that website on our website at wosu.org/allsides. So for our listeners, are you a lover of young adult literature? What's the appeal to you? Especially if you're an adult, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So, Cinda, you know, pipe in whenever you can. But to all of you, I was wondering, and maybe we can start with Casey, how are we defining young adult literature these days? What does it even mean? Because I want to read the Pepper books.
That's a bad question for me, because actually my books are not young adult books. They are adult books, although I do have many young adult readers. So I think that's the interesting thing with the whole adult, young adult thing, mm-hmm. is this crossover. Because I read what's considered young adult. I know young adults who read adult literature. So I think it's one of those amorphous things. It's kind of hard to define. What is young adult literature? 10, 12 years ago, I'd say it was literature aimed at maybe seventh graders and up, but I don't think that's true anymore.
Cinda, what do you think?
Well, I'm old enough to remember when there wasn't a lot of literature that was targeted directly at the young adult age group. So it's pretty much a golden age for young adult lit, and I'm finding that a lot of adults, I'll get emails from readers who they are almost apologizing. They're saying, "Oh, I'm a 45-year-old, you know, and I love your books." And I think with the advent of ebooks, we may see fewer categorizing, because it's so easy for people to move from one shelf to the other.
And Tom Baddock, your Funky Winkerbean was the first, or is considered the first comic strip, not just written about youth, but for youth.
Oh, well, no, it there had been a number of teen strips, you know, like Archie and Ponytail, things like that before. But Funky came in, and I was kind of the anti-teen strip because I was trying to do everything they weren't doing. So,
you mean something sort of realistic?
They had sort of, if you'll pardon the pun, strip mined that domain pretty well in terms of comic strips, and I wanted to touch on things that they weren't doing. They were dealing with parents yelling at kids about talking on the phone or using the car, cleaning up their room, and those are such old cliches. So that's one reason there were no parents in Funky. It was easy to avoid that because I kept them out of the picture. And I went a little bit under the skin and dealt with what the characters were thinking inside, you know. And that's obviously a huge influence of Charles Schulz, who brought that to the comics.
What inspired you to go that route? When you've always wanted to be a cartoonist, but did you always want to tell a story about youth?
No, I sort of backed into it. When I graduated from Kent State, I went to New York and tried to get a job at Marvel Comics. I mean, I wanted to do Spider-Man.
And you went right to the top.
That was my goal. I came back, and I was teaching school, started doing a strip for the local paper once a week on their teen page. And so I just started using things from my sketchbook, drawing things that I'd seen around the school, and just adding little captions. And that's how I got into that, you know, particular genre. It worked very well for me. I don't think at my age I'd be happy doing Spider-Man right now, but I'm real happy with doing the strip where the characters are now.
I think when Tom talks about the idea of the cliches, that seems to be something that kids are really moving away from. They want something serious. They want something, I don't like to say it's grown up, Casey, but there must be something appealing, something accessible about Pepper Martin to them.
Sure.
And it isn't cartoony and silly.
She's very real. And because of that, she's a lot of fun to write about. And I imagine, like I said, she's not intended for young adults, but many of them are reading her because I think she is accessible. She's thinking about the same things they're thinking about relationships and friendships. And because the Pepper Martin mystery series is supposed to be funny, I hope it's funny. I hope readers find it funny.
Witty.
Witty. That's a better word than funny. Intelligent and witty. I like to think that, they can tune into that with her because she's a little snarky and she's worried about fashions. And at the same time, she's trying to keep herself alive and investigate mysteries for ghosts. She's worried about what she's wearing while she's doing it so that she looks good. So I think kids appreciate that.
I'm talking with three authors who will be featured at the 2012 Ohio Anna Book Festival coming up this weekend in Columbus. For more information, once again, go to WOSU.org/allsides. Cinda Williams-Kima, author of The Gray Wolf Throne, also Tom Baddock, creator of Funky Weaker Bean, and Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin mystery series, including A Hard Day's Fright. Questions or comments for them, and I'd also like to know if you're an adult and you like young adult literature, give us a call. Tell us what you like or maybe what you liked as a young adult. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, growing up, we always had tons of books in my house, tons and tons of books, but not a lot of, nothing really in my age group. I think I was in the fifth grade and I read The Drifters by James Michener. I didn't think anything of it about reading a story about drug addicts. So who knows, right? We have an email from Frank. Two questions for Tom. Your Sunday strips are always tinged with a crepuscular blue twilight, regardless of the setting. Is that a secret reference to Kent State's school colors? Also, would you consider featuring medical marijuana as a story arc? That sounds like something Crazy Harry would be in favor of.
Okay. First, when things kind of went computer, I went and found one of the best comic book colorists, and I'm working with a guy now, and so a lot of that input is his, and his name is Rob Rowe, and so the color schemes and color choices are what he does, and I found it's nice to sort of back off a little bit and not mother hen things so much. And I found if you give up a little control, you gain a lot. And I think he does amazing work. But no, it's not specifically Kent's colors. The medical marijuana, that's definitely a subject I'll probably get into the week before I retire. So.
He only can do so much. J.K. Rowling is, she's given a lot of credit for igniting the current trend. And Casey, you just rolled your eyes.
No, that wasn't a roll. That was a happy smile.
Okay, which is because it's all good, right?
It's wonderful.
But anyone who's old knows that really there always have been books about and for older kids. There really have been. So I wondered, but maybe they weren't intended for them. So I was wondering, what did you read growing up? Cinda?
I read everything. I morphed almost directly from children's books to adult books. I used to pick up my mother's books all the time. I was laughing at your story about reading about drug addicts. I was caught in Problems of Democracy class reading Valley of the Dolls, which was this hugely controversial book at the time. When I was small, I loved the Beatrice and Ramona books. I read a lot of adult high fantasy as a teen. And that's the way it used to be. I think teens have always gravitated to fantasy because a lot of it is about coming of age. Many adult fantasy characters are adolescents because that's when there is an onset of power, socially and, politically and magically. So fantasy has always been popular with teens. I think fantasy written specifically for teens can be a little more accessible. I think the biggest mistake that writers for adults make is assuming that it's somehow easier to write for teens. They are the most wonderful and the toughest audience there is.
You agree? I mean, from your do you hear from teen readers, Casey?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And of course, with the advent of email, it's so much easier now than it used to be to hear from readers. So, yes, I do hear from a lot of readers. And Cinda's right. It's like children's picture books. Everybody thinks, oh, that'd be easy. I could do that in a day. Yeah. Wanna bet? It's very hard to make those connections, especially with teenagers, because they're not going to put up with a lot of nonsense. They know when you're leading them on, you know. So you've got to be aware of who you're writing for and what you're writing and what you're trying to accomplish.
Tom Baddick, a lot of your characters have grown up now.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing their children or mm-hmm. other kids, you know, children of other kids in school, but mostly their children of theirs.
Yeah, the sons and daughters, mostly daughters of the characters. Yeah.
Right. And I was, how do you keep it fresh? I read that you actually do go back into high schools and hang out and watch the kids.
You know, when I started out, I was teaching school and the job was so overwhelming that I couldn't teach and do the work in the evenings. So I left teaching, and my art teacher in high school was a very thoughtful guy. I think he understood even more than I did at that point that that was really my base and my mother lode. So he invited me immediately to come out to his art room to just come in and sketch. And eventually I started subbing for him on a regular basis. So it was at my old high school, and it was great. And so it's something I've continued to this day. I don't do it at quite the same pace, but I still go out there just so that when you're drawing the text, you know, so I'm drawing a modern digital projector and not a film strip projector, you know, it's something like that.
Right. So it looks sort of new. But actually, yeah. When I was going back and looking at the compilation of the first couple of years, the first volume, it's back to a lot the way it looks today. A lot of the kids look today like they looked back in the 70s.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Well, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's a little bit more edgy. I've got a character, Owen. You see him always walking around in that sort of Inca hat or whatever, the knit hat. And I've got a new character, Alex, I'm introducing, who's kind of a little goth girl. So they're a little bit more of a push than those kids were. But yeah, it's funny. My characters went through a lot of changes and ended up kind of back at the same place.
My guests are Cinda Kima, she's author of The Grey Wolf Throne, also Tom Baddick, creator of Funky Winkerbean, and Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series. They are all featured at the 2012 Ohioana Book Festival this weekend. If you want more information, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Here's your chance to see This American Life live. Today, the show is coming to the big screen. Join WOSU Public Media for This American Life live. It is at the Lenoxtown Center AMC Movie Theater and other movie theaters in and around Central Ohio. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, visit thisamericanlife.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, providing a disciplined approach to help individuals and small businesses grow and maintain their wealth. TheMontgomerySolution.com.
58 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 66. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 43 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 72. For the latest from All Sides with Ann Fisher, be sure to visit our website, wosu.org/allsides. There you can watch the show live weekdays from 10 until noon. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guests, Cinda Kima, author of The Grey Wolf Throne, also Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series, and Tom Baddick, creator of Funky Winkerbean, all three featured authors at the 2012 Ohioana Book Festival this weekend. Go to our website, wosu.org/allsides, for more information. If you want to speak with any of the authors, you have a comment. If you want to tell us what your favorite young adult book was. It doesn't have to have been written for young adults, of course. James Michener certainly didn't in my world. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Tom, and again, once again, Cinda and Casey, you know, jump in. Authors often talk about how they first write the stories of the lives of their characters to guide them in writing the stories about the characters, if that makes sense. And I wondered if you'd do that with Funky, if you first sat down, because I know one your very first strip of the series, they introduced themselves.
Right.
This is who I am.
That had actually been suggested when I took when I went to New York and tried to get the work syndicated. A really nice editor at the Chicago Tribune Syndicate sat with me and suggested that, and I just made a mental note, I'm going to do that if I get the chance. And so that's how I did that. But it was easy to do because I needed to come up with characters right away, because the strip I was doing for the local paper was a panel. And to carry a strip, you need characters. So I just took friends and put them in. And I dropped in teaching associates. So when you drop in somebody like, say, the band director, he comes with a character, and it's all kind of built in. So in that sense, the strip is an easy one to write because it's already kind of prepackaged for you.
What about you, Cinda? Because yours get kind of complicated.
Yeah, my books are kind of complicated. I like to introduce characters to readers in the same way that we get to know people in real life. In other words, in real life, you know, people don't come up to us and say, you know, hi, I've got long blonde hair and I've, you know, a perky nose. And so readers get to know characters by spending time with them, which I think makes them very real. Hopefully that's the goal anyway. I don't do a lot of pre-work on my characters. I probably should, but I tend to get to know my characters on the first draft. And then when I go back through a second time, I make everything match up and make it look like I intended it that way all the way along.
What about you, Casey Daniels and Pepper Martin?
I agree with Cinda. I pretty much do the same thing. I have a basic idea of who a character is, where I want to go with the character, what the person's job in a book is. But it's fun to get to know them as you write the book. The other advantage I have, and Cinda does too, and I guess Tom does too, because we're all doing continuing characters. So where if you're writing a freestanding book, let's say you have maybe 80 to 100,000 words to get to know somebody. When you're writing a series, the ninth book in the Pepper Martin series comes out in September. It's called Supernatural Born Killers. So, you know, I've had almost 1 million words to get to know characters. And that makes it a lot of fun. You can do so much with them.
Well, series seem to be, on that point, series seem to be very popular with in the young adult world of literature. Cinda, is that just because it's a great moneymaker, or is that a vehicle that young adult or young readers glom onto?
Well, I think they're popular with publishers because they're they can be a moneymaker if you have a series that is successful. You don't have to do as much marketing book by book because people are already waiting for that next book when it arrives. I think with teenagers, it's very much like all my life when I've been thrilled when I've discovered an author that I love, and you go out and you buy every book that an author wrote and you burn through them. And I think it's very comfortable for teens to come back to a world that they know and characters that they already have a relationship with. And I think they don't feel as much like they're, you know, taking a chance when they're reading in a committed series. On the other hand, I hear from readers who say, I can't believe I have to wait until fall to find out what's going to happen with these characters. And I'll get emails, you know, are Han and Reza ever going to get it on? You know, you know, so,
as if you're going to tell them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, sometimes I feel like that from day to day. And then I forget to read the comics that day and realize I've missed that.
The big point. Yeah.
But, you mentioned in your blog, you were talking about Fred and Ann, two of the characters.
Right.
And you recollect how at one point Fred had been married before.
I didn't know this.
You had forgotten, right, which is understandable. You mean Fred in real life or Fred the character you just forgotten over the course of 40 years?
I was putting the book together, and I get to this one strip where Fred is saying that the coach is holding his daughter hostage until he gets something from Fred. And I'm going, wow, Fred was married. I didn't even know that. It was just a one-off joke. I just kept moving along. And so I've got to retcon that thing right now. I'm working on it right now where we find out about his first marriage, a daughter from his first marriage. And so it was kind of fun. So the book was kind of informative to me as I was going along. But that's one of the great things of doing a strip for 40 years is the continuity that you, you know, the history that can be built into it. And it's fun to play with that.
But keeping track, this is Cinda, keeping track right. of it can be, and when you have readers that read your books 5 and 6 and 8 times, and then you get this email, you know, like, I was just wondering, you know, Alicia's eyes change color between, you know, so I try to keep notes, but I do mess up every now and then.
And Tom, you mentioned, I think in your blog as well one time, or may have been an article I read, that some of your readers noticed that the division of the football team had changed from Division III to Division I at one point.
And that was
they're all worked up over
in
that.
Comic strip parlance, that was known as a screw up. I just missed it. So I wrote them back and I just said, hey, you know, it just means they got better over the weekend.
Right. Bigger and better. Evan at OSU. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to call and, you know, I'm a senior at Ohio State, and I can remember the first book I probably fell in love with was A Wrinkle in Time. You know, and I just wanted to talk about the reason why I fell in love with it was because the magic, there was a reason why it worked. And I think that's just huge in adult literature. If there's an explanation for things, why they work, you know, it's so much easier for me to buy into that world. And I just thought that was so cool, and you still see that in some books today, but not a whole lot. So I just wondered what you guys thought of that.
That's the hard part.
Casey?
You know, it's really hard making that magic happen on the page. It often happens in an author's head. We know what we're trying to do. But that's why they call it work, you know, because it is work. It's hard to slap the words around and make them do what you want them to do and convey that, the atmosphere that you're trying to convey to readers. And it's wonderful when readers get it. That's our reward.
Cinda, correct me, and I forgive me if I'm wrong, but one of your series is kind of like a parallel universe.
Yes, well, it's I have two series. One, right. The Air Chronicles is set in Ohio, actually. The Seven Realms series is set in a place called the Seven Realms, which is a fairly traditional high fantasy world, long ago, far away, princesses and thieves and horseback and swordplay and castles, and it's a great landscape for drama, and I think that's one reason that you see it used frequently in fantasy stories. I actually created that world for an adult high fantasy, speaking of crossover, series that I began writing while I was waiting to become an overnight success as a young adult author. And so I wrote 500,000 words in this world, and then when the Air series took off, I thought, well, I'd still like to write for teens, so I took those characters back to when they were teenagers, but I had the world built, I knew the characters, so my advice to young writers is never throw anything away.
Okay. And Tom, you know, Baddock, the phrase landscape for drama stuck with me because Funky Winkerbean in and of itself doesn't appear to be a great landscape for drama, and it wasn't originally, but right. You were a finalist, a Pulitzer finalist for your drama of Lisa's story.
Right.
And how did you make that change and
it was,
fit?
You know, it's not often you can point to like one thing, but it really was one particular story arc that moved things forward. I was at the high school and I was sketched a girl who was pregnant. And I thought, you know, if this strip is supposed to be in the moment and as real as I can make it, then I should include things like this. So I wrote a story about a girl in high school who was pregnant, and it was Lisa. And in the course of that story, Les, who was not the father, but he was her best friend, he was even her Lamaze partner during this whole thing, these characters started to grow up. So it was going to be tougher to have Les go back and be hanging from the gym class rope in the middle of the homecoming dance. It just wasn't going to work as seamlessly anymore. And they were telling me they were ready to grow up, and I wanted to write something that was had a little more substance to it than I'd been doing before. So that propelled things forward, and then it was just one step after another. And in when I was a sophomore, I was doing sophomore humor when I started, and I was young, and things like breast cancer and stuff weren't on the radar screen. But there's a point in life where you are aware of people who are dealing with this, and you're talking to people about it, and you want to be able to write about the things that are relevant to you at that stage in your life. And so that's how everything progressed.
Do you think it's still appealing, or do you think about keeping it appealing for the younger readers?
There's, you know, because the sons and daughters of my characters are still in school, I do that. But I never, from day one, knew what was appealing to I had no idea. I really kind of wrote what was appealing to me, what was interesting to me. It's nice to be able to write about the kids, but now they're sort of, it's from a tangent, because it's still my core characters that I speak through and that I move through.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guests are three authors who will be featured at the 2012 Ohioana Book Festival this weekend. Cinda Williams, Kima, author of The Grey Wolf Throne. Cinda, once again, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And also Tom Baddock, creator of Funky Winkerbean, and Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series. Casey, thanks again for joining us, and Tom as well.
Sure.
Question from a caller. Do authors find writing for young adults gives them more freedom to explore feelings and fantasy than when writing for adults, where expectation is to be more serious and realistic? Now, let's start with Casey, because Casey, you don't write for young adults. You write for, do you feel like the expectation is to be more serious and realistic?
My heroine works in a cemetery and investigates mysteries for the ghosts in the cemetery. So right there, you know how serious I am. The books are silly, as you so brilliantly put it. They're witty.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be serious. You know what? The world is serious enough. Each mystery that Pepper investigates certainly is serious. Someone has died, or someone's reputation has been besmirched. Something serious has happened that propels each case forward. But I like to have fun with books. I don't want to read serious, and I don't want to write serious. So I think you can get away with, call it whimsy if you want, even with a thread of seriousness, you can still have fun with the story.
Cinda, what about you?
Well, I think young adult books run the gamut from extremely realistic, dramatic stories to humor stories, just like adult books do. I think that teenagers are less patient with writers showing off. It always comes to mind. I remember my older son, when he was 16, he was reading a book, and he threw it across the room, and he said, 100 pages, and all they did was go down the road. So as authors, we have to make our work accessible, provide a strong storyline, compelling characters. It's kind of like speed dating. And as it works out, a lot of adults like that same kind of literature.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you'd like to speak to any of our guests. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do any of your fans ever argue with you about an element in your strip, Tom, or in your stories, Cinda and Casey? Tom, does anyone ever say, wait, they wouldn't say that?
Yeah, occasionally. I had a guy write me when the girls' basketball team this last spring won the state championship here in Ohio. And he says, your characters have always been sort of lovable losers, and we can't have a winner, you know. And so I just wrote him back, and I said, I thought it was just kind of a neat thing to have Les, who was the sort of non-jock of the universe, have a daughter who won a basketball championship. Parents never seem to get the kids that they ought to have. It's always like polar opposites. So, yeah, they always have suggestions and criticisms.
What about you, Casey?
Yes, and as Tom said, sometimes it's a great suggestion, and sometimes it's picky. I'll get people who comment about police procedures in the book. Well, the cops really wouldn't have done blah blah blah. Well, I'm not writing a police procedural, so I'm not worried about being true to that. The other thing I get from readers that I never expected when I started this, like I said, these were just fun, crazy kinds of stories. But I'm getting people asking my advice about what to do with the ghosts in their house. And that has always surprised me. And I want to say, hello, I made it up, you know. So that's been quite a revelation.
Cinda, what about you?
Well, I get emails from readers who want to direct my characters' love lives, and so I've got this Team Eamon and Team Han thing going on. You know, she has to end up with Eamon. She has, you know. Uh-huh. And then the other thing I did was kill off a character in one of my books, and I was inundated with emails from people unhappy with me. One boy, his email was a single line, epic fail, Chima. So, it's wonderful that we have so much communication with readers these days, and many of them aren't afraid to tell you what they think.
Your last name's pronounced Chima?
Yes, but
I apologize.
That's okay.
I was given the wrong pronunciation. I apologize, Cinda. You began writing romance novels in middle school. Did you write about romance among middle schoolers or what?
Well, I had a group of friends, and we were all, sort of the outcasts. We actually had a band. We were musicians, and we also wrote stories starring each other. And so in middle school, there's a lot of yearning and not much actual romance. So I found that the power of fiction was that in fiction, I could get the cute guy, which really wasn't happening in real life. So I still have some of the stories that I wrote at that time, and it's kind of cool because there's enough distance that I'm no longer embarrassed by them.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, do you feel like, Tom, that your work necessarily is better now than it was at the beginning? I mean, I keep the first story I ever wrote as a journalist, as in newspapers, just to remind me.
I do think it is better now than it was. It's certainly different, but I'll go back occasionally through my old writing books, and I used to write a ton. I'd try to write 10 or 20 things a day. Just, you know, I used to work on that monkey method that if you gave a monkey a typewriter in an infinite amount of time. And so that I thought, oh, that sounds good. And so I would do that. And I'll occasionally go back and look through those books and of no good ideas. And I realize they really are no good. It's just the way it is.
So is it the 8th or the 9th one coming out, Casey?
The 9th one will be out in September, yeah.
And the quality, in your opinion?
I hope it's better. I hope I get better every day when I sit down to write. If not, why bother? You know, I hope I'm always trying different things. I hope I'm seeing things in other people's writing that obviously I'm not copying, but I'm going, oh, well, I didn't think I could do, you know, whatever, thus and such. So I hope every day is better, and I hope every book is better.
My guests are Cinda Chima, author of The Grey Wolf Throne, also Tom Baddock, creator of Funky Winkerbean. Casey Daniels is with us as well, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series. If you have any questions or comments for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
About 24 horses a week die at racetracks in the U.S. Many horses run with injuries masked by injected painkillers. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Walt Bogdanich and Joe Drape of the New York Times about their investigation into American racing and why tracks with casinos have higher rates of injury for horses and jockeys. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the fallout of President Obama's new support of gay marriage, Mitt Romney taking credit for the auto bailout, Ohioans support Governor Kasich's fracking tax, those topics and more on Columbus on the Record. It's tomorrow night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
58 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today warming up to a high of about 66. Clear skies tonight, a low of 43 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 72. More sunshine on Saturday, a high of 76. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guests are three of the authors who will be featured at the 2012 Ohio Anna Book Festival this weekend. Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series, and Cinda Chima, author of The Gray Wolf Throne. Also, Tom Baddock, creator of Funky Winker Bean. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Cinda, I read where you said that in the Seven Realms series, you thought it was a story in three books, but it turned out to be four. Now, I know that there's a benefit, you know, if you're a series, you can always keep developing things. And we talked about that earlier, and Tom Baddock, you know, this could go on, you know, for another 40 years and you have time to work on all these different stories. But, well, maybe in a holographic way. But Cinda, how do you get to that point where you're like, oh, no, it's four books, not three?
Well, writers are divided into plotters and pantsers, as in seat of the pants.
Oh, and... I wondered. I saw that reference, and I wasn't even going to ask about it. Okay, yeah.
And I have a tendency to be a pantser. I know how it's all going to come out, and I, know the characters, and I know what the basic problems are that they start with, but I don't know everything that's going to happen along the way. And my agent wanted to sell the series as a three-book deal, and I said, I think it's three books. I got to page 576 in book three, and everything was still a total mess. You know, nothing was resolved. Everybody was, you know, and I thought, so it turned out being four books. So that's the price you pay for not planning things out ahead of time. The other thing that with a series is that once things are out in print, you can't really change them. So if you're in book four and you're saying, oh, I could have set that up better in book two, you can't make that change once it's out in the marketplace.
You can't go back.
No,
40 years later.
Notes in.
So I'm going to do another another takeoff on that. The Hunger Games has really emphasized the hunger for young adult dystopian literature. And they seem to really glom onto that. But it's just another way of telling the same story of transformation, it seems to me. Casey, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a good story is a good story. If it's set in the future in some horrible society, or if it's set in a fantasy world or back in Victorian England, you're still telling a story that on an emotional level needs to connect with readers. And as long as you're doing that, where you do it certainly adds to the plot and the excitement of a story. But you still have to have that core.
It's really interesting in the dystopic literature or anywhere to see and to read about young people overcoming adversity, because it seems like a lot of them are so pampered. They don't have a lot of adversity in their lives in real life unless, you know, I mean, some do, but a lot of our kids don't. And they don't go to war. They're not, you know, dealing with the dystopian society necessarily yet. Cinda, how do you develop your characters within the struggles that they deal with that most kids don't deal with?
Well, I think a lot of themes remain the same and have always remained the same. Coming-of-age themes like taking more control of your world and fitting into a society when you feel very much an outcast or a misfit, and finding the right partner for love. It's all things that have always been with us. And one of the things that distinguishes young adult lit often is the fact that the characters, the main characters that make things happen, are teenagers. They don't want an adult coming in and fixing things. They don't want, you know, mom in middle grade fiction, mom or dad can step in and fix things. But in young adult fiction, the characters themselves are the ones that have to make the difference. And I think teens enjoy reading about characters, no matter what the size of the problem is, where they're seizing more control of their world and affecting its outcome.
that's kind of what's great about Funky Winkerbein. It was about them and them plowing their way through it. The parents didn't get involved, Tom.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, if you're in a junior high or a high school, you're in a dystopian world.
That's a really good point. You know, that's your world, and it's dysfunctional.
I mean, I can see the identification is easy.
You know, you've dealt with everything from acne to breast cancer to post-traumatic stress war veterans, divorce, and now you've just introduced a new arc in the strip about gay teenagers going to the prom. Tell us about that. What inspired that?
Well, this one, it started, it was a year ago. I'm a year ahead on Funky, so.
Okay.
And I was sitting at the breakfast table a year ago, and I saw an article about some parents that were protesting high school here in Ohio. And they were protesting the school's apparently more open and tolerant policies towards gays. And I contrasted that with what I sort of gather when I'm out at visiting my high school. And it's sort of by osmosis that I pick it up. But it seemed to me there was a huge generational divide, that the younger generation, the emerging generation, was maybe the one that would down the road bring this sort of culture war to an end. They seemed more tolerant, more accepting. And so I just took that. I got a ready-made scenario. I got both sides of that question all set to go in the strip, so I just dropped it in. And I don't normally, I'm not very didactic in the strip, but it gave me a chance to express my viewpoint on it.
And what kind of response have you been getting?
Well, if you put a map up and started putting pins in, it's all over. There's the usual crowd that doesn't want to, thinks comics are only supposed to be funny, shouldn't be talking about things like that. I've gotten a bunch of emails that are very nice. They don't go into any great detail. They just say, thanks a lot. It's really nice to see. You know, I am assuming, I don't really know what assumptions to make, but it's split like that. And, but there's only 7 papers of Funky's list that are not running it. They're running an alternate story instead.
Really? There are papers that are not running it?
Yeah. And it's, you know, editors have to make the decision for their particular towns. Mm-hmm. And it runs a gamut of editors making a decision like that to editors. Or I was doing an interview with one paper where they were going to take the strips into the local high school and use it as kind of a catalyst to just talk about it and make it, you know, get a discussion going. So, again, it's all over the place.
And the Dispatch did an article about it. They wrote a story about it, interviewed you for that. Is that pretty common? Have you been doing a lot of that?
Yes, there has been a great deal of that. It's just one of those things, mainly because coming from the comics page, it's just a different venue. You don't expect to see it there, which is kind of sad. We're the one art form that's never been allowed to grow up. We were sort of sent to Never Never Land sometime back in the 50s, and we've never gotten to be adults, and so that's why it looks different, you know.
I remember Mary Worth introduced me to mental illness.
Yeah, well, you know, well, Mary Worth is one of those strips that's sort of a carryover from the golden age of comics. I mean, comics were for adults. I mean, there were a lot of great adult strips, but there was a point when comics became a little bit simpler, and people just started thinking of them as they were only supposed to be funny. Things just kind of evolved that direction. And I can't blame people for that because they look at the comics page. That's basically what they're seeing. The Mary Worths and the Judge Parkers and stuff are few and far between.
Right.
But again, because you speak about, if I were writing about this in a book, no problem, movie, no problem, play. But because it's in the comics and because you're combining words and pictures, suddenly it has to be just for kids. And so that's where the conflict comes in.
Cinda Chima, since you do write for young adults, to what extent do you censor yourself on sensitive topics that parents might object to, like, say, gender identity or being gay?
Well, I think that all readers want to see themselves in stories, to be able to find stories where they can see themselves. So I make a conscious effort to have a diverse class of characters. There are some stories that I'm not the author to write. You know, for example, a story that focuses on a hate crime, or, you know, against a gay person, because I think someone with a more direct knowledge of that would be the best person to write a true story in that realm. But what I can do is I can have some gay characters. I can have people of color, and they're just characters that are on the stage, and they're, you know, playing. It's not about the controversy. They are people on stage, and the more that we can include diverse people, I think, the better our lit will be. I always try to be true to the character, and even if it takes me someplace where that might be a little bit edgy. Everybody has different standards for what's acceptable. Somebody can tell me what the rules are, you know, but everybody has a different idea of what is appropriate for young adults. So I try to be true to my characters, true to my story, and, you know, hope that the gatekeepers won't keep my books out of the hands of, I mean, there are people for whom the element of magic is controversial. I've had school visits canceled because there are wizards in my books.
And since Casey Daniels just gave us another look of recognition on that score, right?
Sure. What she said. I agree with all that. Absolutely. Because I do the same thing. You know, whether if I have an African-American in my book, if I have a gay person in my book, they're just characters in the book. And because my books are for adults, you know, I don't have to worry about somebody saying, oh, no, you can't read this. Although I guess people would say that even about ghosts. Like Cinda said, you know, magic has locked her out of things. I suppose ghosts offend some people, too. So there's always something somebody's going to pick at.
Tom Baddock, you know, you're obviously it's a visual medium. And sure. I was wondering how you decided to depict those two boys who are buying their tickets to the prom together, and just how you thought, well, what do I want them to look like?
I just want them to look like two normal kids, because that was really the thrust of the whole story. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about being gay. It's more about tolerance versus intolerance and treating people the way human beings ought to be treated. So I didn't make them look particularly one way or another. And I didn't have one of my characters, I didn't have them become or out themselves as being gay, because it would have been a stunt. Those two characters are really ciphers. They're just there to allow me to jump into that story and let my two sides kind of war over it a little bit and then come to the conclusion that it does at the end.
Do you, Casey or Cinda, use your books as a way to make a point about something you feel strongly about, Casey?
There are little points here and there. But basically, my books are meant to entertain, and because they're mysteries, you know, to set out a puzzle and to take my readers along. But as I mentioned with writing series before, you have so many more words to work with. You have so much more time to develop characters that my main character, Pepper Martin, starts out pretty darn shallow in the first book. She's a young woman who's had a life of luxury, and she's not going to let anybody forget it. But as she grows up, you can start making little points here and there. You know, by book four, she's eating soup in a cardboard box with a homeless guy in Chicago. In book one, that's not anything she would have done. So you can start showing her the world and showing it to readers as you do it.
This is Cinda. I think story always has to come first. Theme comes out of story, not the other way around. And if you write a book specifically to convey a message, that's like, you know, teens can spot that a mile away. And sometimes I'll have writers come up to me and say, I want to write a book that will show teens not to do X. You know, and I just quail when I hear that. So I find that there are always themes, you know, at the end of the day. When I go back and read my story, there are issues about class consciousness. There are, you know, issues about justice and tolerance and all of this. But the story comes first, in my opinion.
Email from David. Are there any suggestions for writing a book as a complete amateur? Is it best to outline the plot and characters from the beginning, or just start writing and see what happens? I have always dreamed of writing a book, but wouldn't want to waste time if I'm not writing according to industry standards.
Oh my!
We talked about that earlier, though. There are no standards, Cinda.
Well, I'm not saying no. I'm not saying there are no standards. I'm saying nobody can agree on what the rules are when it comes to content. But I think I think the important thing to remember about writing is that it's a skill like anything else. And a lot of people seem to confuse the physical act of writing with the, development of story. And so the first thing is to read widely. I mean, read a lot. You can learn an awful lot by reading really great books. And then you have to practice writing. A lot of people would like to have written, but they don't spend any time actually writing. So you wouldn't expect to go to Wimbledon, you know, playing tennis without hours and hours and hours of practice, and writing is the same way.
What about editors? I was wondering, Tom Baddock, do you have editors, people who look it over and...
My editor is responsible for spelling because I can't... it's better with computers, but... I couldn't spell banana to save my life, and that's mainly it. I started out, I was sort of a de facto editor of my stuff because I just wasn't being edited. And then I eventually got editorial control, and so it's just kind of seamlessly moved forward. And I haven't worked in any other kind of situation like that, so I've been pretty lucky. I've been blessed to have my just me to yell at.
Casey Daniels, do you have an editor, someone you trust that...
I have an editor at the publishing house,
yes.
So everything I write, obviously goes through the editor. But I would like to back up just one second,
sure.
and give David a comment, the man who would like to write a book. Remember that we all started out as amateurs. Nobody is born being an author, and the only way you can find out if you can do it is to try and do it. So find a story that you love. Think about it all the time, which you probably do anyway. And as Cinda said, just write, and try. You don't know otherwise.
Casey, was it you that I read about? Sorry if I'm mixing everybody up. Where you sit, or maybe Cinda, 45 minutes a day, and then you take a 15-minute break?
It's not 45 minutes a day.
I mean,
wish it was.
45 minutes at a time, and yes. Then you take a 15-minute
yes.
break. That was
I
you.
Set a clock for 45 minutes, and in 45 minutes, all I'm allowed to do is write. That means no spider solitaire and no email. But then my reward is at the end of that 45 minutes, I get 15 minutes to do all the goofing around I want to do. And for me, it works. I know other people it doesn't work for. For me, I've found I do many more pages a day if I follow this routine. Because if I sit down in the morning and say, I have all day, pretty soon all day is gone because I have been playing Spider Solitaire. So this keeps me focused.
And what about you, Cinda?
I think it's important for writers to figure out what works for them.
Uh-huh.
And I've heard writers tell me all different kinds of schedules. I tend to write best in the morning. So my scheme is not to turn on my email until I usually write until 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and then I have lunch and then I do business. So that works for me, but I've heard from people that can only do their best writing at night.
And Tom Baddock, you're a year ahead, so I didn't want to talk to you. A year ahead, wow.
Yeah, but you have to work to be a year ahead. You have to work like crazy to stay there. So, and it's just all the time. It's just a constant thing. I mean, I work at home, and it's very strange. My wife Kathy and I have been like Ozzy and Harriet for our whole lives, because we just are always home the whole time, and it's always there. So you're constantly working at it.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out to join us today, Tom Baddock.
Thank you.
Tom Baddock, he's creator of Funky Winkerbean in its 40th year this year. Congratulations for that.
Thanks very much.
And also Casey Daniels, author of the Pepper Martin Mystery Series, including A Hard Day's Fright. Casey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Cinda Williams-Chima, author of The Grey Wolf Throne, among many others. Cinda, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.